Okay, so today we find ourselves on Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av, so I thought that this would be a great time to start to look into one of the less commonly discussed sugyas regarding Eretz Yisrael and Halacha. I have my notes open, so I can't necessarily see you guys, so if you have a question, just unmute yourself and speak up. So I thought this would be a great time to discuss an interesting sugya that comes up regarding Eretz Yisrael and Halacha. We found ourselves, I guess, over the past few months where many hundreds, if not thousands, of yeshiva and seminary students literally fled Eretz Yisrael, going to Chutz Laretz, and they kind of just took everything with them and, got on a plane, and if they were lucky to get a flight before Pesach, then great. And as a result, I thought we would discuss a unique question that comes up in Halacha. Is one allowed to, or can they take Sifrei Kodesh, Svarim, from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz? Right, we have a situation where you're in Israel for the year, or you come on vacation and you decide you're going to buy a new Sefer. Are you allowed to bring that Sefer from Israel with you to Chutz Laretz, or is there going to be a potential problem that comes up when doing so? And if so, or is there going to be a difference between the different types of Svarim? Is there a difference that doesn't matter if it's a Sefer Kodesh versus a Gemara versus an actual Sefer Torah, maybe a Megillah, or just, any other Halacha Sefer that's been written, over the past 5-10 years, is there going to be a difference between them? We know that Eretz Yisrael has a higher level of Kedusha than Chutz Laretz, and there's unique halachot that apply to Eretz Yisrael that don't apply to the rest of the world, mitzvot Tliyopa Aretz, Shemitah, Yovel, Chala, Orla, Trumat Maestro, that's all going to, apply in Eretz Yisrael that might not necessarily apply in Chutz Laretz, or at least wouldn't apply on the same Dioraita level to Chutz Laretz as it does in Eretz Yisrael. And we know we have a klal in halacha that's discussed in brachos on Chavchadam and Aleph and on Shabbos, Chaval Chamud Bet, most famously known for the sigyos in Hadlakas Neros Chanukah, that Malim B'Kodesh Vein Moridim, right? We go up in Kedusha and we never go down. We try, no matter what we're doing in life, to be on an upward plane of spirituality. And so the question then is there going to be a problem when it comes to taking Svarim out of Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, where Eretz Yisrael is on a higher level of Kedusha? Is there going to be a problem when I take it from Eretz Yisrael and remove it from Israel and go to Chutz Laretz, that that's going to be actually, instead of Malim B'Kodesh Vein Moridim, we're actually being Morid B'Kedusha. We take the Svarim and we are actually lowering the Kedusha that applies to it. So the question is, how does that apply to Svarim? Does this discussion, is it going to be part of Dine Eretz Yisrael? It's a halacha specific to Eretz Yisrael on its own. Or is it actually, no, it's a halacha that pertains to Dine Sifrei Kodesh. It's a halacha that applies to Svarim. And what's going to be the difference? Is it a law that affects the land or a law that actually affects the Sefer directly? And is it that the unique aspect is the Kedusha of the land and I can't remove the Svarim from the land? Or is it that I don't want to remove the Sefer to a place where it's going to then be on a lower spiritual level? The Yerushalmi in Sanhedrin Gimel Tet has a very interesting Gemara. It says, "Katav Rabbi Lezer liYartui Svarim shezachta behen Eretz Yisrael in motzim otam Chutz Laretz." The Yerushalmi says, Rav Lezer was asked a question regarding, someone passed away, and he had, a wonderful library, and he wanted to leave his library to his inheritors. And they said, "Well, can the inheritors live outside of Eretz Yisrael? Can they then take the can they accept the Svarim and bring them to Chutz Laretz with them?" And he says, "No, you can't bring Svarim that were Zocha. They were lucky enough. They had the Tzchus. They had the opportunity of being in Yisrael. You can't bring them to Chutz Laretz." Rav Nisi b'shem Rav Lezer im katav al menat lehotzi motzi. Rav Nisi elaborated, and he said, "If the Sefer was actually when it was written, the person who wrote it, the scribe, actually made a tnai. He made a condition that he could remove the Sefer from Eretz Yisrael. Then that would be okay because by having the intention when you started that the Sefer was not going to be involved, it would be limited in regards to the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, so as a result, taking it out would be acceptable because the Tanai, the condition in advance, basically limited the Kedusha on it and it did not get the full Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, there wouldn't be a problem." That is, seemingly pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara then continues.
Any Sefer that ever went to Eretz Yisrael, even if it wasn't written there,
that's going to be part of the discussion. That's part of the discussion. Are we going to differentiate between things that were written in Israel versus maybe if I bring a book from Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael, does it get Kedushas to Eretz Yisrael and then I can't bring it out? or not? And then also, how does the Tanai work? We're going to discuss that. Is there going to be a difference between the Tanai of when you buy it in Israel versus you bring it from abroad? How, you know, maybe you have more control on the condition. If you bring it with you from, you know, London, Boston, Paris, New York, wherever you're coming from, then when you actually bring the Sefer with you, you would have in mind, oh, I have a plane ticket to go back next week. You know, clearly I'm just bringing it with me as, you know, I'm bringing my Siddur because I want to daven when I'm in Israel. I'm bringing my Chumash or whatnot. Then that would definitely, you know, be considered part of your Tanai. We're gonna see that in the, you know, rest of this year. The Yerushalmi continues and ends with an interesting point. You know, Rav Lazer said, you know, he's discussing a question, and he asked the person who asked him the question. He looks at the guy who says, you asked me about, you know, a guy who inherited Sfarim. Can he accept them in Chutz La'aretz? And he says, when you asked me this question, were you asking me this as a halacha lamaisa? You were asking me for psak? Or, you know, you were curious, this question came up, you were discussing it in the Beis Medrash, and you had a pure curiosity, and as a result, you were just, you know, wanted to know what the halacha would be in this theoretical situation. And the person who asked the question said, no, I wasn't asking it for halacha lemaisa. And this leads to two potential thoughts that could come up. On one hand, I could say, Rav Lazer was talking theoretically. He was discussing halacha in a bubble, and maybe had the real question come up where we were discussing a case and the guy stood to inherit an entire library. He was inheriting, you know, a few hundred, if not thousands, Sfarim from, you know, his great uncle who was a Talmud Chacham in Yerushalayim who basically passed away without kids and knew that, you know, he had someone in Chutz La'aretz who wanted all the Sfarim. Maybe the halacha would have been different in a case of Hafsid Merubah where he had, you know, it's not just one or two loaned books, but it would be an entire library. Or we could take it even further. The Gemara in Bava Batra on Daf Kuf Lamed Amud Bet says, Ein lamdin halacha lo mipi alimud v'lo mipi amaisa ad she'amru lo halacha lamaisa she'al ve'amru lo halacha lamaisa yelech v'yaseh maisa. The Gemara in Bava Batra tells us that we can't act halacha lamaisa based on a story or you were in Gemara Shir and your Rebbe said something in a whole discussion on the sugya that you were learning. You can't paskin based on that unless you actually asked the question or unless it was said, this is halacha lamaisa. Just because, you know, there's a discussion that happens in Shir, a conversation in the Beis Medrash, that doesn't mean that you go and act halacha lamaisa based on different, you know, discussions. You really need to be told this is halacha. There's differences between, you know, discussions versus actual psak. And that's kind of a little bit of the introduction that, you know, this Yerushalmi really is the foundation for the entire Shir. The question is, what stands behind this sugya? It's a very unique question, and, you know, that's something we discussed earlier a little bit. What's so unique about this, you know, bringing Sifrei Kodesh from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz that, you know, there's going to be an iser to it? So the Netziv, Rav Natali Tzvi Berlin, the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, he explained that actually this halacha, it's not a din in Eretz Yisrael, but it's actually part of Hilchos Sefer Torah. And he mentions this in a Shilas and Shuvos and Meshiv Davar and Siman Ayin Zayin. He was asked the question actually by the Stecha Amed himself. He was asked the question. A sofer was a karaite came to a sofer and said, "I want you to write me a Sefer Torah." And the sofer is like, "I don't know. Can I write a Sefer Torah for someone who's a karaite? You know, that's not, you know, they don't. Am I allowed to do that?" So the Stecha Amed's like, "That's a great question. I don't really know." So we asked the Netziv. And the Netziv responded, saying it would be acceptable under one condition. The Netziv said you could write the Sefer Torah for a Karaite with all, you know, so long as you wrote it with Tanai. When the Sofer sat down to write the Sefer Torah, he had in mind, this Sefer Torah is going to the Karaite Shul down by Yam HaMelech, or this is for, you know, my friend Reuven, the Karaite. And as a result, it now was limited in its kedusha from the beginning because it was known that it's not going to a regular shul, it's going to a Karaite community, and as a result, now it doesn't have the full halachic status of a Sefer Torah. By limiting it at the beginning, it is going to not have the full kedusha, and then I have no problem selling it to my good friend Reuven the Karaite. The Netziv says, and what's my proof for this? We have a Yerushalmi that says I could bring Sfarim from Chutz La'aretz, from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, if I take a Tanai. So the entire discussion in the Yerushalmi, the Netziv points out, is going to be, what's my problem? Am I allowed to take a Sefer from a higher spiritual status and relegate it to a lower spiritual plane? The Netziv says, you can. Under what condition? If you take a Tanai first. So the Netziv says, so too, the Sofer can write the Sefer for our good friend Reuven the Karaite if he takes the Tanai at the beginning. That is the Netziv's understanding. Fascinating question.
That's that's a brutal diss on Karaites. Writing the Sefer Torah for them is considered a lower level of Kedusha?
No, it's saying that... If you, I guess. Well, you know, there's different discussion on how we relate to Karaites, but we'll leave that aside for now in our discussion on, you know, focusing specifically on the sugi. That was kind of a fascinating question the Nitziv was asked, as that Yanov ties into our discussion here.
Wait, so are you also not allowed to like write a Sefer Torah regularly for like some dude? Like, you're not allowed to write a Sefer Torah for like a non-Jew?
And that's going to be a discussion. If there's going to be Kedusha Sefer Torah, and then I don't know how they're going to use it, what they're going to use it for, maybe that's going to be inappropriate. Different discussion. I'm not going to get into that now, but definitely a separate discussion that's worth having at a future point. Okay? The Artzos Chaim wants to say that it's not specifically a din in the actual Sefer itself, but rather it is the lessening of Kedusha. Not only that, the Artzos Chaim takes this Yerushalmi a few steps further. It says, it's not just from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, but rather, if you have a Sefer that's in Yerushalayim, you can't bring it to the rest of Eretz Yisrael, right? You go to Me'asharim to buy a Sefer, and then you want to go bring it to, you know, wherever you're living in, you know, Modi'in, Beit Shemesh, wherever else you're going. You couldn't remove it from Yerushalayim, because we know that Yerushalayim is on a higher spiritual status than the rest of Eretz Yisrael, or even more so if you were by a Sefer in the old city itself, or you go up onto Har Abayit and there's a random guy selling Sfarim in the corner, you can't buy it and then bring it even off of Har Abayit. Now, and the Chibas Yerushalayim says the same thing applies with Tzfat. Tzfat is one of the four holy cities, so too, you couldn't bring it from Tzfat to Eretz Yisrael. So that's a different opinion, is it's not specifically about the Sefer, it's a din in, we're shifting from one level of Kedusha to another, and it's not my Kavana at the beginning is going to make the difference, but it's the place imbues it with a higher level of Kedusha, and that's why it'll apply with Yerushalayim and Svat. The third opinion in understanding what the Svara, the Tam, behind this Yerushalmi is that it's not a din in the Sefer itself, or it's not a din in Kedusha's Eretz Yisrael, but it's actually part of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Part of, you know, living in Eretz Yisrael and building Jewish communities in Israel is knowing that there's Sifrei Kodesh, right? We can't have a Jewish community without Svarim. You know, we're the people of the book. How could we have a community without Svarim? And as a result, if our goal is to build up Eretz Yisrael, we need to have all the Svarim we can. So as a result, the Yerushalmi went so far in saying, you can't ever take Svarim outside of Eretz Yisrael because we need them here in order to build our communities. That'll have nafkaminas of what happens if, you know, you have a community that has plenty of shuls. Can I then take it out? Or are we going to say, no, it's shifting the playing field. We're shifting the spiritual status of the Sefer. And thus, of course, you know, you could never take it out no matter what. With that, we have a little bit of an introduction behind this, you know, unique Yerushalmi and some Svara behind it. Now we want to know, how does this halacha actually work? Could it be that the halacha only applies, maybe, you know, the Yerushalmi was talking about inheritance. Maybe it doesn't apply to other Svarim. It's unique to Dine Yerusha. Does this apply to Svarim today? Maybe it was only back then. Is there a difference between a Sefer Torah that's written with Hilchot Stam, right? It has the unique halachic status that it was written on parchment with quill and ink, and there is sirtut, and it's on kosher cloth, and you had kavana beforehand. That's different than when the guy presses print and prints a Sefer. Maybe there's a unique difference between them. And how do we relate? You know, we have a din in Yerushalmi, but, you know, most people have never heard of this halacha. Why? Because it's not quoted in the Bavli, and it's not quoted, you know, in our standard halachic svarim. So how are we going to relate to it when it's, you know, a din in Yerushalmi that's not quoted elsewhere? So it seems pretty clear from the Yerushalmi that there is a direct prohibition on bringing Sifrei Kodesh from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. But as much as the Yerushalmi brings it down, it's omitted from classical Sifrei Halacha. It's not quoted in the Bavli. The Rambam doesn't quote it. Neither does the Rif or the Rosh or the Torah Shulchan Aruch. So it seems very odd that we have a unique halacha that's quoted in the Yerushalmi, seems to be pretty clear, but then is just omitted for the next, you know, few hundred, if not thousand, you know, from the time the Yerushalmi is, you know, written till the time of the Shulchan Aruch, you know, more than 1,000 years has passed. We have a, you know, and no one's discussing it. So I would have thought maybe, why does the Yerushalmi discuss it and not the Bavli? The Yerushalmi is discussing halachot that apply to Eretz Yisrael. The Bavli left it out because, you know, they were in Bavel. It wasn't a halacha that was relevant to them anymore. Just like the Bavli didn't discuss Zerayim, Kadshim, and Taharot, with the exception of Brachot and Nida, it left out all these halachot that were irrelevant to life in Bavel. Because if we're going to focus on what we're learning, let's learn Dinei Nezikin, let's learn Dinei, you know, Moed, about things that apply to us. But that answer can't it does not really suffice because the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch left it out. And both the Rambam and Rav Yosef Kairo himself, they lived in Eretz Yisrael, at least for part of their lives. So it seems very odd. Not only that, the Kesef Mishnah writes on the Rambam that the Bavli and the Rambam left out this halacha, and it wasn't just a casual omission, oh, they forgot about it. It was an intentional, you know, they intentionally left it out because they disagreed with it. And because they did not paskin like this Yerushalmi, that's why they left it out and they didn't paskin like it. And it's not, you know, what makes it so important is the Kesef Mishnah was authored by Rav Yosef Kairo himself, the author of the Beit Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch. So by the fact that the Rav Yosef Kairo writes in the Kesef Mishnah in Hilchot Nedarim at the end of the sixth parak that we don't paskin like this, it seems pretty clear that he really holds this isn't halacha and not just, you know, a casual omission from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. Because he himself wrote the Shulchan Aruch and writes elsewhere, we don't hold like this. The former chief rabbi of Ireland and Israel, Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Alevi Herzog, in his Shuchaycha Yitzchak, writes explicitly that we don't paskin like this, Yerushalmi halacha l'maisa. And he says, as we said before, none of the main Rishonim or the Shulchan Aruch ever paskin this Gemara, and thus it was never actually paskined. The Yerushalmi quoted this as it was a din. It was some sort of, you know, it was a halachic, it had halachic bearing, but it wasn't actually a psak halacha. There's a difference between things that are said as halacha, but actually were not paskin l'maisa. So too is brought down in the Shu'at Mincha d'Elozer, the Munkacher, wrote in his Shuvos that the halacha was quoted in the Yerushalmi, but never actually paskined. And he says, he takes it a step further. The first half of that Yerushalmi is a very, very unique din, that you can't bring fruits of Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz. And then goes into this discussion in discussing the different halachot of what can I bring from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz. The Yerushalmi then quotes our discussion here about bringing Svarim. So the Munkacher explains, what does that mean? Clearly, we know that the Bavli and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch all paskin, right in Choshen, Mishpat Reish Lamed Aleph, that you can't bring the fruits of Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz. So, clearly, it seems very odd that the Gemara in the Bavli and the Rabbam and Shulchan Aruch would quote half a Gemara and omit the other intentionally, or unintentionally. If they saw the first half of the Yerushalmi, it would be pretty obvious that they saw the second half too. So as a result, the Munkacher explains that that's the reason that they clearly didn't paskin like this, because they would never quote half a Gemara and leave the other one out unless they purposely didn't hold like it. And this was the answer that, you know, so as a result, he says, this Yerushalmi seems to be a chumra, you know, a chumra ba'alma. It clearly wasn't halacha l'maisa, because we wouldn't just paskin half of the Yerushalmi. We'd either take all or take nothing. We wouldn't just take half and half. And Rav Yoel Amital told me this when I discussed the sugya with him. He said, you know, it's not paskin anywhere. I find it unlikely that, you know, we really would say we're going to accept this halacha l'maisa that wasn't brought down in any of the, you know, in the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, or even the Bavli. He then said, with a little bit of a kpeda, I guess, he said, I have a much easier time being matir people to send svarim from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz than for people themselves to travel from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz. The isser of people leaving Eretz Yisrael is in the Bavli, and it is in the Rambam, and it is in the Shulchan Aruch. So they could ship all their svarim, but who says they could go? So that was just, you know, a similar idea, but he was saying, you know, it's ironic we're discussing this, but we don't, you know, what about the actual discussion on people leaving Eretz Yisrael, which actually is quoted in the Bavli and in the Rambam. Rav Vosner was actually asked. Fruit. Yeah.
You said we can't send fruit out of Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, that's part of the discussions. That's the whole discussion with, you know, can you make a, as we said with Svarim, maybe you can make a Tznai. That's going to be a very important question that's dealt with today when, you know, we have, you know, there's fields in Israel that are literally, their sole business is we export fruits. And that's part of the whole discussion. If they have the Tanai in advance that they're going to sell it abroad, then that's going to be, you know, similar to here. You could have the intent at the beginning to undo it. But that's definitely going to be a very important, you know, when we're discussing, you know, Medinat Halacha, running a Jewish state in Israel that goes according to Halacha, that's a very, very important discussion of, you know, shipping fruits. That's going to be a very important discussion in, you know, the coming, you know, year or two with Etrogim. Do you buy an etrog during Shemitah? Do you not buy an etrog during Shemitah? There were many, many gedolim who have a personal kapeda to dafka buy etrogim from Eretz Yisrael and not from Egypt, where, you know, those are the two main exporters of etrogim because of Kiddushas Eretz Yisrael. And you could say, what? There's an Isra on that, but they're made to be exported. That's part of our whole discussion. Okay? The Shevet Alevi.
But how can you buy it during Shemitah?
Ah, so that's.
Is that its own problem?
Yeah, so the general understanding is either is that you buy it as a package, right? You buy your dalad minim, and when you buy your dalad minim, the guy says, oh, you bought your lulav, your hadasim, and your aravot, take the etrog for free. So you're not buying the etrog. It's havla, it's included. You're getting a package deal. You're not actually giving him money for the etrog. You're buying the lulav, and as a benefit, yeah, you bought a lulav. We have a special deal. Buy a lulav, get a free etrog. And thus, you're not paying for it. It grows on its own. You did all the prep work beforehand. And, you know, the trees don't, you know, that's part of the difference between fruits versus some vegetables. Fruit trees, they regenerate every year. So you don't really have that problem. Okay. The Shevet Alevi was asked he was asked about this question, can I bring Svarim to Chutz Laaretz? And In his shuva, he actually ironically opens off. You know, it's kind of funny. You ask me the question, I'm on vacation in Chutz Laaretz, and I actually don't have any svarim with me to properly give you like a lengthy answer. Generally, Shevet Alevi's shuvot are not necessarily, you know, your three-line shoot SMS from Rav Aviner, or, you know, your short one-paragraph shuvot. You know, it's generally he gives you a proper write-up, you know, a few pages of, you know, here's the whole background. He says, I don't have my books with me, so I'll tell you what I know off the top of my head, and everything else, you know, you'll be fine. So, I guess, you know, he wrote a two-page tshuva, and, you know, we're talking about, you know, tall, full-page, you know, full pages with two columns, you know, off the top of his head without having svarim. So I guess, you know, that's why he's the Shevet Alevi, and, you know, I'm not, because, you know, he could do that off the top of his head. So it's just a little bit ironic that he mentions that at the beginning. Rav Uzner points out the first half, you know, exactly what we're saying. The first half of the Yerushalmi is discussing not bringing the fruits outside of Israel, and that's brought down, but this discussion of the svarim being brought down is not actually paskin anywhere. And he says, that is our proof that we don't paskin like this Yerushalmi. And it's not like the same way that the Munkacher explained that it's a chumrah. He wanted to say, this was never codified into halacha, it never was accepted. And as a result, it completely fell wayside by the fact that the Bavli and Rambam, Shulchan Aruch never paskined it. It's just not even halacha at all. But in the Tshuva of the Ridbaz, as well as the Chida and the Shuk Kol Gadol and the Shelat Shlomo, all four of them actually made an interesting point. They said, this halacha seems to have never been formally codified. It was never actually codified into the Sifrei Halacha. But it was clearly a practice that they cared about in the times of the Yerushalmi. It wasn't just, you know, Rav Lazer said something and everyone was like, oh yeah, Rav Lazer has this crazy practice, you know, who cares what he says? No, it was clearly what he was saying seemed to be, you know, the normative halachic opinion of the time, but it wasn't accepted, but it was never codified further on. The question that they then deal with is, what's the difference? Why in the times of the Yerushalmi would they have, you know, had this practice of, we don't remove Sfarim from Eretz Yisrael Chutz Laaretz, but now we don't care about this. This halacha fell wayside completely. And so the Ridbaz and the Chida point out that there's a big difference in the times of the Yerushalmi versus our day and age. He says, in the times of the Yerushalmi, Sfarim weren't common. To have a book meant the scribe sat down and hand-wrote it and copied it, and it was an extremely expensive and tedious process, and as a result, there was an Isra to remove them from Eretz Yisrael. But today, you walk into any store and you could buy a sefer for, you know, 30, 40 shekel. Sfarim are plenty. They're printed. You know, there's no problem of removing them because of that. And he says the Rishonim already didn't codify this halacha because they had Sfarim. So there's definitely questions we could ask because, well, the Bavli didn't, you know, quote it. And the difference between, you know, the commonplace of books between the Bavli and Yerushalmi, I'm not sure what the, you know, academic historical difference would be between the Bavli and Yerushalmi. We're talking about, you know, a few hundred years. There was no printing press yet for, you know, another 1,000 years. And also, we know from different Rishonim that how expensive and rare owning books were. You know, most Rishonim didn't own a full set of Shas. So I'm not sure, you know, this answer, you know, the Rishonim already said, oh, we have so many books, unlike the times in the Yerushalmi. There's clearly a big jump from the Rishonim, you know, Rashi, Tosfot, Rambam, Rif in the early, you know, the year 1000, 1200 versus, you know, the very end of the shift from the Rishonim to the Achronim, or, you know, with the invention of the printing press, definitely makes a big difference. And the Chida, you know, basically explains this. And the Chida says, there was a time when people used to actually, they would sell all of their Svarim in Eretz Yisrael before moving abroad, right? You couldn't make up, there was a famine in Israel, as, you know, we see with Avram Avinu, or many times throughout history, and people then would move overseas because they needed to make some money to support their family. They needed food to eat. And so the Chida says people actually would sell all of their Svarim before moving abroad because of this halacha. But he said this did not apply to all books. This only applied to handwritten books that were very expensive. And as a result of this, once the printing press was invented, this halacha actually changed. So that, according to the Chida, though, there would be a very, very important difference, halacha lamaisa, for, let's say, rare manuscripts today. If, let's say, you know, the National Library or, you know, different, you know, special libraries or people who own very rare collections of manuscripts and handwritten books, maybe those could never leave Eretz Yisrael, because even today, those are priceless. The Dead Sea Scrolls are priceless. You can't replicate them. And as a result, maybe the Isser of removing them from Eretz Yisrael, if, you know, one of the major, you know, the Oxford Library wanted to put the Dead Sea Scrolls on display, maybe there would actually be a halachic Isser, according to this Chida, to bring them overseas, because they're so rare and expensive, they're literally priceless, and thus I would never be able to replace them. That's the opinion of the Chida. Whereas then,
that on the books themselves, because they're not, just because they're more expensive doesn't mean they're more holy. So
correct, but the fact that it's one of a kind means that it would never be able to be replaced. So that's, as in, that was the metzias they discussed in the time of the Yerushalmi, of very rare, expensive handwritten books that you couldn't easily get. So he wants to say that the svara of the Yerushalmi would apply to, let's say, those rare manuscripts today.
Right, but then what if, like, is that just the danger of generally moving books that expensive, or is it also something to do with having like a Yerida in Yiddisha?
I don't think it's a specific, you know, the danger of them getting ruined, but just that's what the Yerushalmi was discussing. We were discussing very expensive, you know, handwritten books that were very hard to find, and as a result, you can't just move them overseas, because that's actually what the Yerushalmi was discussing. Not, you know, a fear of them getting ruined in transit or the Kedusha falling, but that's what the din in the Yerushalmi is discussing. Unlike when you walk into any bookstore and buy a brand new, you know, set of Rambam that was printed 3 weeks ago, you know, that's not what we're discussing. Rav Eliezer Deutsch in the Shu Pri Sadeh actually explained that not only did the printing press completely change this halacha, but because we have Svarim more readily and cheaply available, when the authors and the printers write their Svarim, their intention, their kavana, when they write the Sefer, is I want my Sefer to be sold as far and as wide as possible. I want as many people in the world to read my book. If I want to make my book famous and popular, I want more people reading it. Write a book that has 5,000 people reading it. It's clearly going to, A, make me more money, and B, make me more famous and well-known than if it only sold 10 copies. And as a result, when someone writes a book today, because of the printing press, their goal is, I want to sell as many copies as I possibly can. So their intent when actually writing a book is, it's going to sell overseas as much as possible. And as a result, it's going to, the stam das, without actually thinking, oh, is it going to be sold overseas or not? The general intention of an author is, I want to sell as many copies as possible. So too, their intent is, I'll sell it overseas if that's someone who's going to buy my book, because I want them to see my book as far as possible. And the person's going to want to ship Svarim as far as possible, because their whole goal is not just, you know, the personal kavod of, I'm going to be famous, everyone's going to own my book, but part of writing a sefer is l'hagdil Torah l'adira. You want to spread the word of Torah. You wrote a whole sefer about, you know, let's say Shmir Shabbos Kilchot Torah. Rav Neuvert wrote, you know, a sefer on Hilchos Shabbos. That's a sefer that literally almost every Jewish home in the world has. And Rav Neuvert wasn't thinking, when I write this sefer, I'm going to become a household name. It's, I'm going to help people keep the halachos of Shabbos and know how the intricate halachot apply in a day-to-day situation. And because he's trying to teach the halacha, he's trying to show people as much as possible and educate people to Torah, that's his sole goal. And because today people just want to spread their Torah as far and wide as they can, of course they intend to sell their Sfarim anywhere and everywhere they can. Rav Avadia Yosef, interestingly, said that this halacha is definitely not you know, was never codified, because people will travel with their Svarim all over, whether it's from Yerushalayim to Eretz Yisrael or Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael. And he said the same thing. The whole point is that you want to sell your Sefer as far as you can to as many people. You don't care who you sell it to. You just want to make sure that it's sold so that you could spread more Torah. And he says that this halacha was never actually applied. Even if there was no Tanai, even if you didn't take the Tanai in the Yerushalmi, then it doesn't apply. And the reason for this, Rav Avadia says, is because this is a Sfeik Sveika. There's two Sveikot here. And we generally say when a Sfeik Sveika applies for a Din Derabanan, it's not going to apply. And Rav Avadia basically is the first Sfeik is, maybe we don't paskin like the Yerushalmi at all. Right? The halacha, this halacha is brought down in the Yerushalmi, was never actually codified. And even if, the second Sfeik, even if we did paskin like this Yerushalmi, maybe in our generation, this halakha doesn't apply anymore because Svarim are commonplace and readily available. So Rav Avadia says, we don't even need to make a Tanai anymore because of this Sfeik Sveika. And according to Rav Avadia Shita, whole discussion in the world of Sveikos, the Ashachin, Kuntra Sveik Sveika, and in Yerodea Siman Kuf Yud, whether or not we need a Sfeik Shemisapech or not. Rav Avadia's whole opinion is Sfeik Sveika is enough even if it's not Mitapech, even if it doesn't, go backwards and forwards. So that's Rav Avadia's whole opinion. You don't even need to have a Tanai because it's going to be okay. Rav Bezalel Stern, the Bezalel Chachma, wrote on this as well. And he said, it's very interesting because this halacha doesn't come up in any of the Rishonim, as you mentioned, or the Shulchan Aruch and Nechoshen Mishpat, where we discuss all these other halachot. And as a result, he says too that this Yerushalmi was only halacha when Svarim were common. But today when they're common, it doesn't apply anymore. But he says, that might be true. But lechatchila, in an ideal world, we should really be makbid for this Yerushalmi. We really lechatchila hold you shouldn't remove Svarim from Eretz Yisrael unless you made it Tanai, because that's what the Kaftor of Perach said, that's what the Hilchot Ketanot says, that's what the Chachmat Adam and the Peat HaShulchan and the Dovev Misharim, all of them actually hold like this halacha lemaisa. So Rav Bezalel Stern and the Shu Bezalel Chachma really hold lechatchila we should be makbid and say never bring a sefer from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz unless you make it Tanai, but if you forgot or whatever, circumstance, someone already did it, bidyevet, it's totally fine because really Mikra Adin, it was never paskined. And that leads us into the world of those who actually say we paskin like this. The Peat HaShulchan and the Dovev Misharim actually paskin like this Yerushalmi at face value. They say that if you were to be Ola from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael, and then for some reason your aliyah didn't work out, you have to make your idah, you have to go back to Chutz Laaretz, unfortunately, your aliyah didn't work out, you'd have to leave your Svarim in Eretz Yisrael unless you made a specific Tanai. Because you literally took your Svarim and said, I am moving from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael, and I'm going to be living there full time. And as a result, your Svarim categorically shifted their status of Kedusha from Sifrei Chutz Laaretz to Sifrei Eretz Yisrael. And unless you made a Tanai at the time of your aliyah, you would not be allowed to bring them back to Chutz Laaretz unless you specifically stipulated as such before you came. The Peat HaShulchan writes, this goes so far that back to our sugya in the Yerushalmi, if you, let's say, wrote a Sefer in Eretz Yisrael, right? You sat down, you wrote a beautiful Sefer, and then you passed away. We assume that the person's Stam Das is that their Sefer stays in Eretz Yisrael because they have a Sefer in Eretz Yisrael. Why would they ever want to send it to Chutz Laaretz? It should be noted, maybe the Peat HaShulchan, Rav Yisrael Mishklov, he lived from 1770 to 1839. So maybe if he was alive today, he wouldn't say that anymore because today traveling from place to place is so common. Today, people ship stuff overseas for selling things all over the place. Amazon has turned into such a huge business. People want to sell their safer as far and wide as they can. So maybe if he was alive today, he actually would agree. But he doesn't say that, and he very clearly and explicitly says that you could not send it to the inheritors overseas. The Korban HaEda actually says that you agrees and says you can never send Svarim as inheritance to Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz, just like it says in the Yerushalmi. But he makes he has a little bit of a knetch. If, let's say, before you passed away, you wrote a will, and in your will you said, my library is going to my nephew who lives in London, please make sure, and here's the money set aside to ship all these books from Eretz Yisrael to London. Then he says, that's just like I wrote, I had intent with the Svarim to send them to Chutz Laaretz. And as a result, the Korban HaEda says, there's no problem. If he actually stipulated in his will, I want these Svarim sent to my nephew Shimon in London, that would be totally fine. because you had das to remove them from Eretz Yisrael. But the Berakos Chaim strongly disagrees, and he says, I don't understand how this works. Doesn't the Yerushalmi actually say specifically that Svarim shezachta bahem Eretz Yisrael, the Sefer was zocha to Kedushas Eretz Yisrael? And the only way it doesn't work is if actually when I was sitting down to write it, v'akotev, you know, b'machshava lehotzi motzi, if you actually wrote it in order to write it down, when you wrote it, you actually were intending to send it abroad. So great, that works. But you bought this whole library, and then when, you know, for your 80th birthday, you hired a lawyer to write a whole will for your all of your estate. Now you decide retroactively you're going to send your svarim to your your nephew in London. How can you retroactively have intent for the time you bought the svarim? Shkayach, you own the svarim, but how can I retroactively have kavana to ship them overseas? And as a result, he very, very strongly, you know, disagrees and says the intent needs to happen at the time of the writing of the svarim. You can't, after the fact, divide the property in your will, and that counts as intent afterwards. Retroactively, we cannot imbue intent on the svarim. And this leads us more into the question of kavana. In the Shuk Kol Gadol of Moshe Chaviv, right, who lived in the 17th century, he claims that even if you don't have intent, you don't have kavana to remove the svarim from Eretz Yisrael, you have stamdas, right? You never ever heard of this Yerushalmi. You never knew that there was this Yerushalmi about not bringing svarim from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz. And you walk into, you know, your local svarim store in Eretz Yisrael, right? You go to any svarim store in Yerushalayim or wherever you are, and you buy a sefer. You have stamdas, just like you want. It's no different than when you're buying bananas at the supermarket than when you buy a sefer in the svarim store. It's just like anything else. Your intent is just you're buying a sefer. And so Rav Chaviv points out that stam das, for the average person, means you could bring it to Chutz Laaretz. Why? Because the average person in his lifetime, right, we're talking about, you know, the late 1600s, you know, he only lived from 1654 to 1696, you know, he only lived in the late 1600s, the average person never intended on living in Israel. You can't, if you were lucky, you came to Israel for a short few weeks, and you went to Chutz Laaretz. The Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael was so small at the time, no one ever planned to live there. So the stam das of the purchaser is, I'm going to bring it back with me to wherever I live. And Rav Vosner, though, strongly disagrees with that, because he says, in our generation, people come to Israel in order to live permanently. And the fact that Jews only come for, you know, a trip and then leave, well, that exists. Plenty of people make aliyah. And it should be noted, you know, this isn't Rav Vosner's big, you know, aliyah pitch. Rav Vosner was, you know, the Posek Hador in Bnei Brak, you know. He wasn't, you know, saying everyone's, you know, we're making aliyah in masses and, you know, big Zionist push. He's just saying, Metzias is, people come from Chutz Laaretz, they sort of live all the time. It doesn't really apply anymore. Rav Stern in the B'Tzalel HaChachma actually points it out, though, that what would be the question of Stam Das? And he actually made a very, very interesting comparison. He said, if you have Stam Das for your Svarim, it's the same as your own personal intentions, right? If you bought a plane ticket that says, I'm making Aliyah, it's a Nefesh B'Nefesh ticket, I'm making Aliyah, and 3 days after you got off the plane, you're like, I'm buying a new Tanakh L'chvod living in Eretz Yisrael, because this is my, you know, then clearly that Tanakh is now going to be Zocha B'Kedushas Eretz Yisrael because you came with a one-way ticket. But if you came as a tourist or you came as a student for a year and you have a return ticket, your intent is I'm buying a ticket to come to yeshiva or seminary and next year I'm going to college in Chutz Laaretz. So your intention clearly was to never stay in Eretz Yisrael. So too, your stam das for buying a sefer is I'm going back to Chutz Laaretz. So the sefer follows your personal intent. And if you plan to leave Eretz Yisrael, so too, the sefer follows your intent. That is, you know, our discussion on what level of kavana do we really need. And then we have a question of, the Yerushalmi seems to say Sfarim Shezachta Beretz Yisrael. Does it make a difference where the Sfarim originated? Rav Chagi actually points out that, he asks the question, is it Dafka Sfarim that were originally in Eretz Yisrael and now I want to remove them from Eretz Yisrael, right? Sfarim Shezachta Beretz Yisrael, right? Seemingly that they were made in Israel. Or do I read the Yerushalmi Sfarim Shezachta Beretz Yisrael? It means that actually they originated outside of Israel. I then brought them from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael. I physically brought them with me and now I elevated them to Eretz Yisrael and now they can't be removed. The Nafkamina would be maybe a sefer that started out in Eretz Yisrael could be removed. And the Halacha Ketanot and Rav Avadia Yosef both understand that Pshat and the Yerushalmi actually were dealing with Sfarim that were printed in Eretz Yisrael. But it would expansively, we would understand the Yerushalmi that it definitely would include Svarim that were brought from Chutz Laaretz Eretz Yisrael, and it would actually include both. But the Pshat in the Yerushalmi seems to be that it was actually written in Eretz Yisrael. So that leads us to the question of what types of Svarim are actually, you know, we mentioned at the beginning this whole discussion, what type of Svarim are we actually talking about? When we quoted the Netziv at the beginning, I would have thought that when we're discussing, it would specifically be a din that's miyucha to Sifrei Torah. Dafka Sifrei Torah that are written with Hilchot Stam, on Klaf, with Dio, with Sirtut. They have Dinei Stam, they're very, very holy. As a result, we can't downgrade their Kedusha. And this is how the Aruch HaShulchan Paskin, he says that the Gemara is Dafka talking about Sifrei Torah, and not other Svarim, and so too holds the Prisada as we quoted before. But the Maraponim, the Rav Moshe Margaliot, in his commentary on the Yerushalmi, says explicitly, it's not just Sifrei Torah, but it also comes to include Gemaras. And Rav Chagi is in the Halachot Ketanot, actually goes further and says, no. He has an interesting chilak. He says, originally, the Takana only included Svarim that were Torah, Sifrei Torah. Why? Because there was a Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebechtav. Torah Shebechtav was the only thing being written. Until the times of the Mishnah, everything else was inherently oral. So this whole din never applied to them. But when the Yerushalmi came and wrote this halacha, already things started to shift. And we had other Svarim actually apply. And as a result, Chazal determined from the time we need to write down Torah Shebaal Peh. So as a result, Rav Chagiz points out that Gemaras and Midrashim also fall into the category of Svarim that can't leave Eretz Yisrael. But different Sifrei Poskim and Mefarshim would not fall into this category because those aren't actually, you know, they don't have this special alleviated, you know, elevated status of Sifrei Kodesh. Rather, they only fall into this category of the author's own intuition. It's not like a davar, it's not divrei chazal. Rather, it's specifically only going to be, you know, the author's own intuition, and there's no kedusha to it. So as a result, Rav Chagiz points out that Chumashim, Sifrei Torah, Gemaros and Midrashim, and Sifrei Chazal are going to be included in the Takana, but anything written after that is not going to be included. So, according to Rav Chagiz, Rishonim and Achronim, none of that falls into the category of this problem.
If you're going to make the argument that, like, the cost of the thing, or, like, how widely distributed it is, has an effect now because we mass print books. Is that like still? Is that going to exclude Sifrei Torah? Because they're so expensive.
Well, like one-offs. That definitely would potentially exclude them. Plus, there's definitely those who say that the din only ever applied to Sifrei Torah. But definitely, the cost for the, you know, the chida who want to say that is the you know, make it, that is the make it or break it point. That would definitely be an important hara to make. Rav Ovadia, though, very strongly disagrees with this point in Rav Chagiz. Rav Ovadia basically says, based on the Yerushalmi in Chala and the Gemara in Chagiga, that we're not going to differentiate between different types of Svarim, right? It seems to be all Sifrei Kodesh are the same. We're not going to start saying, oh, there's Torahs, there's Chumashim, there's Rishonim, there's Achronim, Gemaras versus, you know, Midrash Chazal versus Midrash Agadita. We're not going to be Mechalik, it's all one. And Moshe Shaul Zilberman in his Shilos and Shuvos, right, Moshe Shaul, he explains that when we discuss the whole discussion of Malin B'Kodesh Vein Moridin, then it applies, just like Rav Avadi said, to all Sifrei Kodesh. When we're discussing shifting Kedusha, it doesn't just apply to a Torah. Rather, every single Sefer has a form of Kedusha. And it's about Kedusha Eretz Yisrael, not about the Kedusha of the Sefer. So yes, a Torah has a higher level of Kedusha than, you know, any other Sefer that's printed today. But we're not discussing the Sefer, the din of the Torah itself. Rather, we're discussing the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and anything that shifts from Kedusha Eretz Yisrael to Tumat Eretz Ha'amim, that is going to fall under the category because of Malim B'Kodesh Vein Moridim, that would apply to all Svarim. And now we're going to get to your
question. All anything?
Well, you could say that it applies to all objects, but, you know, we can't, you know, we're not going to create a new a new discussion that never existed, right? The Yerushalmi specifically said has a specific list of what we're discussing, and so that's going to apply to fruits, to svarim, and the like, but it doesn't apply to, you know, tissues or to pencils or whatever. You can't just start adding things into a din derabanan as brought down in the Yerushalmi. We're not going to start, you know, expansively, you know, understanding that across the board, but when the Yerushalmi says svarim shezachta, we're going to have to understand what type of svarim are, you know, being discussed. And that's going to be a question based on you ask. What about Sifrei Torah themselves? Right? You mentioned Sifrei Torah are very expensive. They're written by hand, just like old manuscripts, just like the Sfarim that, you know, the Yerushalmi himself was talking about. So maybe I would think that Sifrei Torah actually do fall into this category. As we mentioned earlier, the Aruch HaShulchan felt that Halacha L'maisa, this applies to Sifrei Torah. I cannot bring a Sifrei Torah from Eretz Yisrael Chutz Laaretz unless I have a Tanai. You can't just walk into a, you know, sofer shop. You go into Sofer Aras and you say, I want to buy a Torah to bring to my community in Brooklyn. He's going to say, well, this was written by Kavanah to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe you then can't do that. But practically speaking, it should be noted, most Sifrei Torah today are actually written are generally written with, you know, by order. Most Sofrim, because it requires so much time and it requires so much money to actually write a Sefer Torah, it's only done when an actual Torah is commissioned, when someone actually says, I'm buying a Torah off you. You don't just walk into a store and say, oh, there's a Torah ready on the shelf. Perfect. That's what I was looking for. That's the size. That's, you know, Ashkenazi, Sfard, Ari, Svardi, all different discussions. You know, there's so many Hidurim that can happen with a Sefer Torah. You know, generally, the Sofrim only spend the time to do so when it's commissioned as such. But Rav Herzog actually felt, he said, there's no problem. Even if you were to walk into Sofer Aras and buy a Sefer Torah that was pre-written, the Stam Das of the Sofer, just like we said, is he wants to make money. He wants to sell the Sefer Torah. So whoever's going to buy it, he couldn't care less. So long as you write him a check to buy the Sefer Torah, Givaldik, and he'll ship it overseas. And Rav Herzog goes so further and says, even in the case where we want to understand and say, the whole Takana in the Yerushalmi is because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that doesn't really apply because there's tons of Sifrei Torah in Eretz Yisrael. There's so many Sifrei Torah, there's so many shuls and yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. You know, if you ship one overseas to a new community that needs it in London or in Melbourne, it doesn't really matter. Rav Ovadia disagreed with this. Rav Ovadia said, every single day, there's a new breakaway minion in Eretz Yisrael. There's a new shul popping up on every corner. Every brand new apartment building has its own shul on the bottom floor. There's new yeshivos and seminaries opening up all the time in Eretz Yisrael, and they wish they could have their own Sefer Torah. How could you send a new Sefer Torah to the, you know, community in Sydney or Melbourne, you know, all the way down under, when we have a new shul, you know, a brand new shul on the corner of, you know, of the street in Yerushalayim that needs a Sefer Torah? How could we ship them abroad? So Rav Ovadia says, really, halacha l'maisa, we do hold, like he mentioned earlier, like the Ritbaz, that we never accepted this Yerushalmi. But he says, really, when dealing with Sifrei Torah themselves, because the Aruch HaShulchan and others say that the halacha really, specifically, was only dealing with Sifrei Torah, really, you should make sure to have a Tanai in advance, which, practically speaking, as we said, is not always so relevant, because generally, Torahs are commissioned. So now the question comes up, the most common question. What happens when I walk into, you know, any store in Yerushalayim or in Eretz Yisrael and I want to just buy a Sefer because, you know, I'm learning something and I want to, you know, expand my library. I want to buy a new Sefer. What happens when dealing with that? Am I allowed to buy a Sefer in Eretz Yisrael? You know, and if so, am I allowed to bring it with me? So we saw earlier that, you know, that maybe it follows my intention. If I'm living in Eretz Yisrael, I buy a Sefer, Stam Das, is it staying with me in Eretz Yisrael? Or if I have a plane ticket to go back to America in 3 weeks or in a month or at the end of the year, then it would work. But if we're going to understand that once the Sefer is in Israel, it can't be removed, right? It's Svarim Shezachta Beretz Yisrael. Do I say that the whole discussion is only relevant for a Sefer that was in Eretz Yisrael? Or does it go by the actual Das? Right? Am I going to say it's an Ifser Cheftza? If we're being lumdus, is the Isser of removing the Sefer from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz Chal on the Sefer itself? Or is it Chal on the person, right? It's my Sefer, I get to decide. I can't let the publisher decide for me, I'm the one that's buying the Sefer. Or no, the Sefer is currently sitting on the shelf of Manny's in Yerushalayim, or a Feldheim in Yerushalayim. How could I remove it? It goes by where the Sefer currently is. Do I say it's on my das, it's the physical, it's on my decision, or the physical book and its current locale is what makes the decision? And as we mentioned earlier, the Peas HaShulchan and the Beis Yisrael and the Shaarei Tzedek, which is written by Rav Danzig, the author of the Chaya Adam and the Chachmar Adam, and Rav Moshe Shaul Zilberman, all said that it's actually, if you walk into a Svarim store to buy a Sefer, the minute you buy it, you bestow a new chalos upon the book. And even though the book is currently in Eretz Yisrael, the buyer is the one who stipulates at the time of their purchase that they plan to remove it from Eretz Yisrael. And your stipulation at the moment of purchase, that is actually what makes it happen. The Bezalel
HaChacham. Your das. You're not the author, though.
Correct.
Is it only on your das as the buyer because it's mass produced, or is that we're taking that you can also have das?
The discussion from the Pasa Shulchan through these four opinions are really mostly in the 1700s-1800s. So mass produce was happening, but not when we're talking about, you get pallets full of svarim, that are being printed by the thousand. Definitely there's what to say that, it shifts over time. But I think they're saying is, how can, John, the svarim store owner, or Reuven, the author, decide what's going to happen with your sefer? It's your autonomy that basically decides what happens with the sefer. The Bezalel HaChacham says, how could this be? Once the sefer is in Eretz Yisrael, you can't remove it. It's a din in the sefer. The chafza is what decides. He says, it seems to be an isur chafza. How could you imbue your intent retroactively on the sefer that's already in Eretz Yisrael? It already has kedushas Eretz Yisrael. And the minute you buy it, how can you remove it? But he says, halacha lemaisa, there's room to make out. I don't understand it, but it's only a din d'rabbanan, and there's a lot of poskim who say that this din doesn't even apply. So we could definitely be make out that you get to decide what happens to it once you buy it. But he takes it a step further, based on exactly what you were asking now. He says, when we're dealing with svarim that were printed in order to sell them, no one, you don't print it, you write a whole sefer, you print one copy and put it on your bookshelf, you just wrote it for yourself. Or people, they'll print 100 copies to give out to, their closest friends and family. But generally, svarim are printed in order to sell. And so when you print a sefer in Eretz Yisrael, we assume that your goal is to sell as many copies as possible, so your stam das would be to sell it overseas. Exactly what you were saying. But he says, what happens, right? I'm living in New York, and I write a sefer, and I print it in New York. And it says, printed in Muncie, New York, or in Crown Heights, New York. And now I ship it to Eretz Yisrael. I assume, the Bezalel HaChacham says, when I send Svarim from Eretz Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael in order to sell, I never have intent that they're going to get shipped back to Chutz Laaretz. I sent them from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael in order to sell them. So now, he says, maybe there's going to be a problem to actually have those Svarim get sent back. There's leftovers. They didn't sell enough. You need more back where you originally printed them, and there's leftovers. He wants to say you couldn't actually do that. But he goes a step further and says, what if you live in Eretz Yisrael? And you're going on a business trip to Silicon Valley in California. So you want to take your dafyomi, you want to bring your Gemara with you so you can continue doing dafyomi. You want to take your, whatever sefer you're currently learning, even though you're in high tech, even though you're learning, you're in business, you learn every day, you're Kovei Itim LaTorah, so you want to bring your sefer with you. But you're going on a 4-day business trip from Tel Aviv to Silicon Valley. Can you bring your sefer with you? And Rav Stern points out, he says, he thinks that's mutar l'chatchila, even the Yerushalmi agrees, because there, the sefer was still zocha b'Eretz Yisrael. You were bringing it out temporarily in order to continue learning. That does not have a din of svarim shezachta b'Eretz Yisrael, she'asar lahotzi, because you're not really changing its status, you're bringing it with you with intent to bring it back. And as a result, he says you could definitely bring it with you and bring it back without any questions. Rav Avadi agrees, as we said before, that your goal to sell to whomever the printers want to sell as many svarim as possible. And Rav Avadia then has an interesting, a little bit of a lumdus chakira here. He says, a seller, when he prints the sefer, doesn't care who buys it. I don't care if it's being bought by a Ben Eretz Yisrael or a Ben Chutz Laaretz. It doesn't matter to me. Whoever's coming with the money to buy the sefer, fantastic. The sefer costs 50 shekel. You give me 50 shekel, do what you want with it. I mean, don't burn it. But practically speaking, bring it with you wherever you go, and preferably I hope you learn from it. And as a result, Rav Avadia says, the kavana that affects the sefer when you buy it It's neutral. It's in a neutral status. You never gave it Kiddushas Eretz Yisrael. You never had a tanai to bring it to Chutz Aretz. It's totally neutral. And thus, the minute you actually buy it, the Sefer changes based on your personal opinion. And as that's how Rav Avadia explains the original opinion, that the buyer is the one who imbues upon it the Kavana, because it was totally neutral until you bought it. The Shevet HaLevi agrees halacha l'maisa, but disagrees with Rav Avadia on the Svara. Well, Shevet HaLevi says, you know, as mentioned, that you would really need the Tanai, and that would apply for publishers and printers. But it's not that the status is neutral like Rav Avadia, and when you buy it, you intend to. But the publisher actually had intent when they printed the Sefer to ship it to all over the world. I want my Sefer to be sold in Brooklyn, and I want it to be sold in Muncie, and I want it to be sold in LA, and I want it to be sold in London, and in Paris, and in Melbourne, and in Sydney. I want my Sefer sold everywhere. My goal is my Sefer should be in every house and every store. And as a result, your intent is ideally you want it everywhere in the world. So it's not that Sefer is neutral until it's bought, but rather you, by printing it, by publishing it, you clearly want it to sell the Sefer. Your goal is to ship it wherever you can. And the Ber Moshe was actually asked as we mentioned before, an interesting question. If you wrote the Sefer in Chutz Laretz and you brought them to Eretz Yisrael to sell and you had leftovers and you forgot to make a Tanai, can I actually bring the leftovers back to Eretz Yisrael? Or not? Maybe because I sent them from Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael and now there's leftovers, I want to return them to Chutz Laretz, maybe that would be a problem because they were Zocha and my Kavana was to sell them there. But he paskin the Halacha L'maisa definitely that, you know, L'maisa, he said you could be Mekel. With that, we've, you know, seen a lot of different discussions on this. And as a short summary, to kind of sum up what we've seen over the course of this year, is that we delved into the question of, can one bring Svarim from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz? The Yerushalmi seemed to indicate that there's a prohibition of removing Svarim from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, but this wasn't quoted anywhere in the Bavli, the Rush, the Rif, Tor, Shulchan Aruch, none of the Nosei Kelim. And as a result, there's many poskim who assume that this halacha actually never was paskin, doesn't apply. And there's other opinions that maybe it doesn't apply today because the Metzias has changed. Svarim are readily available. They're cheap. And as a result, this whole discussion is irrelevant in our generation. It only applied in a time when Svarim were hard to come by. They were not commonplace. And as a result, you couldn't, you know, remove them from it. So maybe, as we discussed, for the Chida, this would apply to rare manuscripts or expensive handwritten, you know, old texts that, you know, you really can't commonly find. There's different debate as to what the reason behind this is. We saw that maybe it's a din in the Kedusha of the Sefer. We don't want to lower the Kedusha of the Sefer from a place of an elevated Kedusha to a place of a lower Kedusha, whether it's Eretz Yisrael Chutz Laretz or Yerushalayim and Tzfat to the rest of Eretz Yisrael. But if you had intent at the beginning, then you would, you know, you never, the Sefer was never infused with a higher Kedusha because it was basically restricted from the start. Or maybe because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the Svarim need to be aplenty in Eretz Yisrael. We need Svarim in Israel in order to properly settle the land, in order to have communities here. We need to have as many Svarim as possible, and that's why maybe this Isser applies. Then we discussed how does intent actually work? What does Stam Das entail? Is Stam Das going to allow it, or is it going to prohibit it? And how has that shifted with the discussion of publishing and mass-producing Svarim in our generation? Is there going to be a differentiation? Are we going to differentiate between Svarim that originated in Eretz Yisrael or Svarim that actually started from Chutz Laretz and then were shipped to Eretz Yisrael or to sell? Or, you know, you're personally coming on a business trip, coming here, going there, or you're coming for the year. How does that apply in these different cases? What about someone who makes Aliyah and then intends to go, you know, their Aliyah is not successful and they plan to go back to the Chutz Laretz? How does where the Svarim originated and how does that affect this discussion? Then we looked into what type of Sfarim are actually included in this halacha. Are we just discussing Sifrei Torah Mamish? What about Sifrei Chazal, Gemaras and Midrashim? What about different types of Sfarim? You know, there's no differentiation, whether it's a Gemara, whether or not it's, you know, a Sefer that was published in 2020. You know, maybe there's no difference at all with different Sfarim. And what's the din going to apply when we actually deal with buying Sfarim today? If you go and you buy a Sefer, who... does your kavana have any bearing on the actual Sefer? Does your intent, does the intent of the author have when he actually writes or publishes or prints the Sefer, how does that affect the purchaser? You know, maybe can someone else, you know, in Adam Oser Davar Shein Mishalo, you know, as we say in Hilchot Muksa, how can it come that, you know, can someone else, you know, give intent for your Sefer? How does that work? We discussed a lot of the different, you know, interesting halachot that apply in this in this sugya, and we hope that Bezrat Hashem, it was Bizocha that are meriting today on Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av, that, you know, when we learn about Kedushas Eretz Yisrael and the unique halacha that apply to it, that we'll only not, you know, when you say it's Menachem Av, that we should not only see the true Nechama, we should always be Zocha to return to Eretz Yisrael, and we should be Zocha to bring our Sfarim with us from Chutz La'aretz Eretz Yisrael, and we should see the Beis HaMikdash, B'mehera B'Yameinu, Amen.